Eric Neil, Chancellor, Flinders University. My question is addressed to Professor Mike Young. With the greatest respect, I have a problem with the arithmetic of leakage and seepage. It seems to me you're making a point that if 200 megalitres or gigalitres is taken out of the river, 100 goes back to the river. But surely if we improve the efficiency of irrigation and only took 100 out of the river, maybe 50 goes back, but there's still 100 left in the river that we didn't take. I have a bit of trouble understanding the arithmetic with respect.
No, let me explain it more clearly. The plan is to reduce three things: seepage, leakage and evaporation. The evaporative savings are real savings because the water goes up into the air. But most of the savings are going to be achieved by lining channels, and that process stops water from leaking into the groundwater and from the groundwater back into the river. So the proposal is to stop 200 gigalitres of water, less a little bit, from leaking into the groundwater, which is connected to the river. So we're going to take 200 that used to flow by one pathway to the river. So the river used to get 200. And then we're going to say we've made a saving, so we'll put 100 back in the river, we'll trade some to Melbourne, and we'll use some more in irrigation. So it used to be 200. We give the river back 100. So the river's been shortchanged 100.
Peter Sutherland, GHD. Mike Young raised the issue about the validity of the original Murray-Darling Basin Agreement, which has been in place now almost a century. I guess a question to all the panellists, but in particular Ken Matthews, would the original River Murray Agreement, now the Murray-Darling Basin Agreement, in terms of sharing between states, stand up to scrutiny under the National Water Initiative?
Thanks very much, Peter. Thanks for nothing. Look, that's an enormous question, and I think Mike is encouraging us to mark out our territory by thinking about now and the future rather than a retrospective look at how it used to be. I think the fundamental issue that has to be considered about the clean break option from the original MDB agreement or from water plans that have been set since then, the fundamental question is, what is our attitude to sovereign risk? And it's very appealing to one part of our mind to make a clean break and to cut the deal again. But there should be another part of our mind that says there are some implications and a lot of economic history about not just irrigation entitlements, but property rights in general, that would tell us that we need to be pretty careful about the fundamental clean break. And I'm not speaking in code there, saying I necessarily oppose it. A point that I made was that there's nothing wrong with a radical solution, but there's everything to suggest that we need to be careful about sovereign risk. There are big bucks invested on the basis of assessments or undertakings that governments have made. And there are long-term plans that have been made. There are communities which have grown, in fact, from nothing to where they are now on the basis of an assumption that the sovereign wouldn't change. And families and individuals are all hanging there. So I don't need to gild it, but I think that's the fundamental choice about the clean break or not.
Can I just add briefly to that? Clearly for me it wouldn't stand up in the National Water Initiative, the Murray-Darling Basin Agreement. The Murray-Darling Basin Agreement is essentially a sharing agreement. It's not a river management agreement. The most standout example of that is what occurred through 01 to 06, where we had on sustained average, 68% reduction in inflows. And what was the Murray-Darling Basin response to a sustained 68% reduction in inflows? We reduced extractions by 12%. That doesn't deliver sustainable water management, which is at the heart of where the National Water Initiative has taken us.
Mike.
Very quickly, I think the agreement is probably one of the best agreements in the world, if you look at it at one sense. It lacks four things that are important. First one is it's silent on groundwater. The river sits in a lake. The biggest dam in the River Murray system is the groundwater on either side of the river. We've now agreed under the COAG MOU to bring in groundwater, and from about 2019 onwards, in a decade's time, we'll start managing it. Interception is silent on as well, yet we know that's really eroding the system and eroding it very, very quickly. The environment clearly needs a share. All the legislation says the environment comes first, but we've all seen what the agreement actually produces. The environment comes last. And lastly, and this is the very important part, and I think why I'm confident enough to say we could actually do this, is that the CAP has in there a set of things called CAP equivalents for all the different types of water entitlements. They're all there as lookup tables. The sharing rules are well worked out. To give each of the states a share and say, look what you've got as a share, is very, very simple. It could be worked out in a week, confidently. It's not rocket science. The intent is there, the property rights being defined. It's just a matter of defining it simply and with clarity rather than taking pages and pages, and it's thousands of pages, to try and work out roughly what it is.
Philip Taylor, Primary Industries and Resources, South Australia. Mike, I've found your argument very persuasive. One issue I have is that you're saying we need to take the politics out of it. Now, unfortunately, politics is really just the mechanism by which we make social decisions, and it seems to me to implement the sort of changes you're talking about, the question becomes, how do we make that politically palatable, or what are the political mechanisms we can use to get people to understand and agree to the sorts of changes you're talking about?
We don't have to take the politics totally out of it. I think what we're really talking about, or what I'm suggesting, is that if we set up a sharing regime which gives the environment a share and gives all users a share, whatever that percentage is, then the role of the authority at the top, an independent authority, is just to make allocations of volumes to shareholders after looking at the river and working out how much is necessary to maintain the basic bit. And that's what we do with the Reserve Bank. We actually get them to make very simple decisions and to do it in an independent way and in a very timely manner. It's not a big step change from where we are. If we take that bit out of the politics, then we can leave all the rest. There's a lot of issues around the detailed planning and a lot of details about day-to-day management, and it can all stay with the states. We don't have to take over the top, the entire thing. The Reserve Bank didn't have to take over Westpac or the Commonwealth Bank or everything to get interest rate management right in Australia. We just need a very simple structure at the top which makes sure that the allocations are right and the allocations are sustainable. At the moment, we manage use, and that's another conceptual flaw. What we should be doing is allocating allocations and then letting markets to decide whether to use them or carry them forward. Instead, we try and overmanage with too much detail, and we try and determine the amount that's got to be used this year and force it to be used this year. It's over-governance and overuse. So get the politics out of some bits of it. They can stay in the land use planning, but get the investment right and manage allocations, not use.